Welcome to Football Friday that got started on a Thursday thanks to a 17-point win by the Raging Cajuns over the Red Wolves. The Nickel Report, Jordy and the Judge, more on the Cajuns and high school football, the Saints versus the Bears, and Monday's headlines on a Friday. Can we get it all fitted in a two-hour time frame? We'll try our best. Today, Friday, October 18th, 2019.
And that ball's driven to left field. Back on it, Garter. He's on the warning track. There it goes! George Springer, a three-run shot, gives the Astros the lead. It's 3-1.
This is a 3rd-and-2, eighth play of the drive for Kansas City. Shotgun Mahomes. Looks to his left, steps up, under some pressure, unloads, it is bobbled, caught, McCole Hardman breaks away, left sideline, touchdown, Kansas City.
I'll know more, you know, in the next few days. We'll get it to you, you know that, so we're not hiding this stuff from you. We just need time to evaluate it, you know.
There's a little bit of good, a little bit of bad in everything. Welcome to this Friday edition of the Jordy Helfer Show. That was head coach Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs. The good, the Chiefs ended a two-game slide with a 30-6 win over the Denver Broncos last night. But in the process, their superstar, Patrick Mahomes, dislocated his right knee. Haven't heard any reports as to the severity, how long he's going to miss. But that's what Andy Reid was talking about. So, golly, I hate to see that happen, particularly to a superstar player like Pat Mahomes. So we'll see what happens. Good afternoon and welcome, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages. Football Friday in Acadiana. He is CD back in the Master Control Suite in the 237 Roost Studios on the campus of Delta Media, which houses, amongst other things, KLWB 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Yours truly. Here, Studio 1A, and away we go. It got started on a good note last night. Elijah Mitchell, Raymond Calais, both run for over 100 yards, and the Raging Cajuns go on the road in a very significant win to beat Arkansas State 37-20 to improve to 5-2 overall, 2-1 in the Sun Belt Conference. So a big, big win, and doing it their way. We're going to run it. Can you stop us? And Arkansas State couldn't, and the Raging Cajun defense did enough and did a good job, and Billy Napier and company get away with a huge, huge win. The Astros came away with a huge win. Correa, Altuve, Springer, just getting it done with the bats. They beat the Yankees 8-3 last night to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the best of seven series. Springer and Correa each hit three-run home runs in game number four, marking the sixth time they have both homered in the same postseason game. That's the most by any pair of teammates in Major League Baseball history. So there you go. Tonight it's Justin Verlander on the bump for the Astros. James Paxton will be on the hill for the Yankees. You go up 3-1 in the ALCS. You win it. The series 83% of the time. So gotta feel good about that. We start off each and every Football Friday with the most important thing, and that's the weather. Now, Chris Cozart of KLFY is on assignment. So we went out and found another great addition to the program, and that's Heath Morton, also of KLFY, making his debut on the Jordy Helfer Show here on 103.7 The Game. Heath, good afternoon, man. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm great. Nice Friday afternoon. I love fall, and it's finally fall, and it's football season, and everything is going pretty well. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's talk about Friday night high school football in Acadiana. Should people bring a sweater? Any threat of rain? Is it going to be a gorgeous night? What is it?
It should be a gorgeous night. Very small chance of a shower. Rain chances 5-10%. Might need a light jacket because temperatures will be dipping down into the mid-60s at game time. So it'll be a little chilly out there. The wind's not going to be as bad as it was last night, so it should be pretty good. I don't expect any problems at all.
All right. Saturday, the LSU Tigers venture to Starkville, and a little fly on the wall told me that you happen to be a Mississippi State alum. Is that correct?
I am. I am a Mississippi State alum, and I don't feel good about this game at all. So I think Miss State's probably going to get beat at least.
Listen, I went and got a hotel room, and I made sure when I registered, I said, give me a room without a view, because I'm in Starkville. That's just an old joke. I'm kidding. I love Starkville. It's a great little village.
It is a nice little college town.
It's a great little
village. There's not a whole lot there, but yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. 2:30 kickoff. A lot of LSU fans are traveling that way. So what's the forecast look like Saturday afternoon?
It looks good. Temperatures lower 70s at kickoff, end of the game, fourth quarter, maybe mid-60s. Should be mostly sunny to partly cloudy, kind of like what we're seeing here today. It's going to be similar up there in Starkville. Pretty good football weather. If you're in the stands, it's going to be pretty warm with the sun on you. But once the latter half of the game comes around, fourth quarter should be just about perfect. Now, I don't expect any rain. We have that potential tropical cyclone number 16, which is going to move over to Florida. But the rain should stay east of Starkville. And most of that rain should stay in Alabama and Georgia.
Okay. Good. Couldn't happen to two better states. Why is everybody so down on Starkville? Come on. What's your favorite thing to do there?
It's been 20 years since I've been there, but I guess the big thing, I really like going to this place called Mulligan's, a little bar there. That's where we'd go hang out and stuff. And I did some storm chasing there. Of course, I'm a meteorologist, so I did some storm chasing. But really, it is a small town, nice little college town, but there's not a lot of, it's not like Baton Rouge, not like a bigger city or anything. So we pretty much just hung out in the apartment, watched football and movies and stuff for the most part.
Be honest with me now. Heath Morton, meteorologist, KLFY. Be honest with me. How many cowbells do you have in your home?
I have one. One cowbell and an interesting story. Back, my daughter was born 5 years ago, and it was when Mississippi State was number one in the country, first time ever. My wife's an Auburn fan. I don't know why. I have no idea why she's an Auburn fan. Miss State was playing Auburn. We beat Auburn, and I was ringing my cowbell, and she was 9 months pregnant. And our daughter wasn't due for another 3 weeks. And she goes, you better stop. You're going to send me into labor.
Oh, no.
And two days later, she went to labor. That's a true story.
Oh,
the cowbell.
Oh, my God. Those cowbells are dangerous, man. They are dangerous, Heath Morton. Before we let you get out of here, Saints going to Chicago for a late afternoon Sunday tilt in the Windy City. What is the forecast like in Chicago for Sunday?
It looks pretty good up there. It looks like a temperatures in the lower to mid-60s. A very small chance of a shower, but pretty good football weather. Not too cold, not too warm, just about right. And, it's the Windy City, but we'll see some winds up there, 10 to 15 miles per hour, so not too bad. But I don't see any problems with that game. At least it's not going to be bitter cold and snowing like it could be in December.
All right. Heath Morton, a Mississippi State alum. His wife is an Auburn alum. I'm not taking you guys out to dinner. I'm sorry. But we appreciate you coming on the show today. Great job.
I appreciate it. Also, I'm an Alabama fan. So, that may make it even worse here. But
your first and last appearance on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Goodbye, Heath Morton. We'll continue this Football Friday. The Nickel Report next. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back.
Indiana Sports Station, 103.7 The This is everything you need to know about the Tigers' opponent on Saturday. Time for the Nickel Report.
Brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana with offices in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lake Charles. When the Tigers, they've traveled their equipment to Starkville, Mississippi for this Saturday's 2:30 kickoff against Mississippi State. Greg Stringfellow and his staff got all the equipment on a Peterbilt truck, and boom, they waylaid it up to Starkville, and away we go. This week's Nickel Report, let's get to our good friend Jim Nickel from Crowley, Louisiana. Kind enough to join us yet again. Jimbo, how good was Tiger Stadium Saturday night when the Gators came to town? And how great was that?
Well, great weather, great atmosphere, and, I mean, just super loud. Even with the headphones on for the broadcast, you could hear the crowd, and it was just electric. And, you know, for the team to go behind and then come back and win just shows you what kind of team we have. It was awesome, awesome. It's everything college football is about. In Tiger Stadium, it was a fantastic experience. Fantastic. By the way, you just mentioned that Peterbilt truck. Just had lunch with Greg Stringfellow. That truck left at 2 a.m. Thursday night to head to Starkville. So it's there now. That truck's there. They're unloading. They're getting the locker room ready. And when we get there later today, it'll be ready to go.
It is the every truck driver's dream to own a Peterbilt. So the Tigers are number two in the country. A lot of people are saying, hey, just coming off an emotional win against Florida. Some people think they may be looking ahead to Auburn. Some will consider this a trap game. I don't. What do you think?
Well, look, they don't have a very good defense, and they're starting a freshman quarterback. But you and I have been to Starkville together. We almost missed the team bus one time watching a movie. I remember that very clearly. But so you and I may have you and I have probably had what they call a letdown in Starkville. But I don't think the team will. I agree with you. I think they've got a lot of senior leadership. Joe Burrow's going to come out firing. I think we take care of business there. I don't see a letdown. Knock on wood. We may start out a little slow, but look, we're healthy. We came out of the Florida game with more players back this week than we've had before. So we've got reinforcements everywhere. And, no, we take care of business in Starkville. And we're going to have a game where the offense is going to have some hiccups. I hope it's not this one. I hope it's not the next two either. But, you know, this is the kind of team that even if we were to start slow and fall behind, we finish strong and we win the ball game. So I feel good.
I just can't see Mississippi State keeping up. I just can't. But without further ado, let's find out everything we know about that need to know about that university in Starkville, Mississippi.
Mississippi State University Nickel Report. Mississippi State founded in 1878, which means they're about 18 years younger than LSU. All Jordy Holtberg listeners know LSU was founded in 1860. Got an enrollment of just over 20,000. Second largest university in the state of Mississippi. Ole Miss ekes them out by about 1,000. Population of Starkville is 23,000, including the Mississippi State students. If they all leave town, they got 5,000 folks left. Endowment, about $270, $280 million, about a third of what LSU's is. It's a good school, though. I mean, Forbes ranked it the 18th best college by, and their veterinary medicine school is the largest and one of the best in the nation. And the other thing they're known for is their landscape architecture school.
Yes.
Second best landscape architecture. You've been there. Gorgeous hedges, very well manicured, very pretty area to go to. Great student newspaper, and I hope you can remember this. In the student newspaper, the crime section is called what? The bad dog section.
You do this to me
section.
Every year.
I get you on the bad dog section.
Yes.
So their mascot is a English bulldog. They call him Bully. And, of course, the original Bully, when he died, they had a full funeral procession complete with a glass coffin for viewing. They buried him under the 50-yard line. Since then, they've carried on the tradition of naming an English bulldog as its mascot. And you and I have seen the other Bullies that have been buried. They've got little cemetery kind of situation right outside of Davis Wade Stadium. What else is Starkville known for? Two things we could find. One, Charles Lindbergh, the famous pilot of the Spirit of St. Louis, he once landed a plane in Starkville in 1927. And Starkville claims to be the birthplace of T-ball. They say they're the people that first started playing T-ball. Now, I don't know if that means they couldn't hit a moving ball and they just started T-ball, or they just decided it was the way to start a little league. But that's the birthplace of T-ball. Famous attendees. Machine Gun Kelly, one of the most famous American gangsters ever, studied agriculture for a couple of years and decided, you know what, I can make more money robbing banks. He left and went to rob banks. And then here's one of Jordy Hubbard's favorites. How? Jerry Clower, baby.
Jerry Clower. Yes.
You remember him? Yeah, the famous country and western comedian. He would be on Hee Haw every once in a while. By the way, he played football for Mississippi State. John Grisham, the great author. I mean, this guy's sold over 100 million books worldwide. Great, great books if you've never read them. Grisham, everybody thinks he's an Ole Miss guy. He went to Ole Miss for law school, but his undergraduate degree is from Mississippi State. You ever heard of Mossy Oak Outdoors, all that camouflage stuff that you wear when you go hunting?
Yes.
Toxie Haas, the founder of Mossy Oak, is a graduate. Pizza Inn, the founder of Pizza Inn, Ronnie Parker, the founder of Viking Ovens, Fred Carl, all graduates of Mississippi State.
Wow.
And then a couple of great baseball players, Will Clark, Will the Thrill, and Rafael Palmeiro, both major stars in Major League Baseball, attended and graduated from Mississippi State. And, of course, we got to call out an old friend of ours. You and I did a lot of time with Bill Martin. He was the assistant SID at LSU grad. He is the SID at Mississippi State. And just real quickly, we're going to be playing at Davis-Wade Stadium at Scott Field, second oldest football stadium in the NCAA, built in 1914, which makes it 10 years older than Tiger Stadium, which was built in 1924. And LSU has played Mississippi State more than any other team in LSU history, and that is the Nickel Report.
Oh, Jim Nickel, 2:30 kickoff. That means no Old Waverly this weekend. What a beautiful course that is, huh?
Oh, we love Old Waverly. I don't know if anybody's ever been up there. And then, of course, we were talking about Mossy Oak. That guy that we just talked about, he paid for a new golf course across the street from Old Waverly. Supposed to be really fantastic. But you're right, too early of a kickoff for us to squeeze in around the golf. We'll just sleep in, maybe do a little exercise, walk, and then get ready, get on the buses. Good news, we're staying in Starkville. We don't have to stay out of town anymore. They built a really nice Yes, there's a very nice Marriott there for all. You know, a lot of people don't realize when LSU travels as a team, we can't stay at just any hotel. We have to have multiple meeting rooms. There's a meeting room for the D-backs. There's a meeting room for the linebackers. There's a meeting room for the running backs. There's a meeting room for the wide receivers. I mean, on and on and on. So when you think of the LSU team traveling, they have to stay in a hotel that you would use for a convention. For years, there was no such thing in Stark Vegas. There is now. So we're 2 minutes from the stadium. Unlike that hour drive we used to have to make in the past, we'll be able to jump on the buses, 12:30, and boom, we'll be at the stadium easily 2 hours before kickoff. Looks like the weather could be a little dicey, this tropical depression, whatever you want to call it. Could be moving sort of near that area. Talking to Stringfellow and those guys, they're prepared for a little rain. Could slow the scoring down. But in and out of Starkville, hopefully with a win, and home in bed by 10 o'clock, which is way better than if we kicked off at 7. Way better.
Yes, it took me about an hour and a half to get back from that Florida game. Nobody left early. It was a great environment. And when that whole 102,000 strong started doing the Gator chomp, I just thought that was priceless. That was one of the great scenes I've ever seen.
Yep. The fans are fired up. LSU fans have a good reason to be fired up. We have a good team. You know, you got to have two things. You got to have a good team, and you got to get lucky. We've been lucky so far. The injury bug came at a good time in the season. If we could stay away from it for the rest of the season, we could see something special happening right now. Got a lot of good leadership. Joe Burrow in the locker room before the game, he is so focused. He is so on point, ready to go. I think our offensive line is coming together really, really well. And, I just think we got a lot. And, look, I think our defense, people were concerned about our defense. Doug Morrow reported out on the radio. Our defense is, like, right there on a lot of plays. Like, we're just an inch away from that interception or that tackle. And I know you got to make it, but I don't feel like we're so far away that we're not a good defense. We're just real close to being a great defense. For instance, that throw in the end zone when I think Patrick Queen, if he bats it away instead of trying to catch it, Perrine doesn't catch it and they don't score. So we feel good about all facets of the team. I'm not too worried about the kicker. He did miss a field goal. That's going to happen. He's a freshman. So we'll see. I'm just excited about how excited the fans are about LSU and about Coach O. Everybody's moving in the same direction. So here we go.
Yeah, I was told by someone who I consider very reliable that LSU will have more fans in the stands than Mississippi State people, which tells me that if you get ahead of State early, they may fold the tent and close the door and say goodbye. So we'll see. And Vegas is pretty smart. They had LSU favored by 13.5 against Florida. We win by 14. We're favored by 18 in this one. I think we cover that one yet again. I just can't see State scoring that much, and I don't see how State can possibly slow our offense down, even if we aren't playing at the level and the emotional peak that we were against Florida. I just can't see them keeping up. I just can't.
Don't disagree with you one bit. And look, the less of those cowbells they ring, the better for my ears. I'll be happy if they all go home and take their cowbells with them.
He is Jim Nickel. That's this week's Nickel Report. Safe travels, and I hope you're in Betty by 10 on Saturday, buddy. Thank you so much. Auburn, up next. Take care.
Can't wait. All the best to your listeners, Jordy. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right, that is Jim Nickel with the Nickel Report. We will continue on this Football Friday with Doug Morrow. It's time for Jordy and the Judge here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Time to talk Tigers with former All-American Doug Morrell. All rise! It's another edition of Jordy and the Judge.
Yes, it is brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Doug fixing to hop on a plane to head to Starkville, Mississippi. Douglas, good afternoon. Thanks for the time, my friend.
Sure, Jordy. Good to talk to you again.
What do you remember the most about that trip to Starkville 2 years ago that Ed Orgeron says we walked into a hornet's nest? What do you remember the most?
What I remember the most was that this was the year. Remember, we had an offensive coordinator who had installed a new offense that was supposed to be very unique, had a lot of motion and that type of thing. And sure enough, our first possession, we scored a touchdown. We have a back come out of the backfield, runs down the rail, gets called back, the touchdown does, for offensive pass interference. And it was not offensive pass interference. It was a rub play, or called a pick play sometime.
Okay.
That was the highlight of the game. It ended up 37-7 in Mississippi State's advantage. And that was the really only good play LSU had the entire game. I think it destroyed our confidence. You know, we're figuring, look, man, we have an offense and we're going to just blow them away. And we start out in like gangbusters, and then it gets taken away from you. And Mississippi State had certainly decided that day to play. And they had a good team. They had a lot of really good defensive players. And I think they just kind of caught LSU off guard. Coach Orgeron, you know, he said that he was responsible. He didn't get them prepared. And there's probably some truth to that. He was trying to, you know, he was in his evolution from being a longtime assistant coach who had been a head coach at Ole Miss. And he kind of has gone through an evolution. And really, this year has come full circle into the evolution where he's, I think, kind of changed his mindset offensively. And he has committed to hiring really good assistant coaches and letting them coach, as opposed to he, Ed Orgeron, the head coach, trying to coach all the positions himself, which I think is what happened in Ole Miss, and that's what got him in trouble. So it's, you know, that's what I remember that. It was a turning point. The loss to Troy was the turning point, but the loss to Mississippi State was the real turning point because it was decisive. It was 37-7. And it was one of those slap you in the face, you better decide whether you want to have a pretty good team or not. And LSU had to go through that transition, and that's the game, I think, that started it. Since that time, LSU has continually improved, I think.
Doug, we're having a little interference there on your phone, so if you don't mind moving just a little bit somewhere, I would greatly appreciate that.
I'm sorry.
No. That's okay, man. That's okay. We're thankful for the time. I look at this year's matchup.
Is this better, I guess?
That's better, yes. This year's matchup, Doug, and I don't see State having an advantage anywhere in this game over LSU. Offense, defense, special teams, I just don't see anything where they have an advantage, which tells me that if LSU is mentally ready to play, and why wouldn't they be, they should have control of this game from the outset.
Well, you know, Jory, this LSU team has a lot of leaders on it. One of the things that is different than it was 2 years ago is that they are packed with people who have been recruited and have gone through a year or 2 years of experience, many of them last year being that year of experience. And now out of that has emerged four or five real leaders among the players. And they kind of police themselves. They require that there be great effort from the younger players. They require all the things that a coach would want to require. But when teammates impose it on you, you're much more receptive to it as a player. Yeah. And so that's what happened. I tell you, Rashard Lawrence, it was interesting to me. He's been injured almost the entire season. Now, he was the most valuable defensive player in the bowl game last year against Central Florida. He had a great game.
Right.
He had a great season prior to that. So he's missed the early part of this season, and he came back to play not full-time last week against Florida, but a lot of the time. He got back into the rotation, and he had a really good game. But the important thing about him is that he is kind of the spiritual leader of the defense. He is one of these guys that all of the players look up to and respect. The coaches look up to him and respect him. He is a first-class individual as well as being a first-class player. And what he's done is brought along with him some other players as leaders. So all of a sudden, last week against Florida, this LSU defense improved a lot from the way it was before the Utah State game. And that is kind of an evolution. That Utah State, LSU had improved the Florida game. Although LSU didn't stop the long Florida drives, they made them drive on a lot of plays, 75 yards, and forced Florida to be perfect offensively. So, you know, I think what LSU has done, they have improved, but the players themselves have committed to the improvement. And I think that's the type of thing that keeps you from getting upset, you know, in a game like this, because Mississippi State is not that good yet. But they have good players. Every Southeastern Conference team has good players, as Vanderbilt showed.
Right.
Everybody's going to have at least a couple of good receivers. They're going to have a good running back. They're going to have a good quarterback. They're going to have some guy defensively who's a stopper. Most of them have good kickers. I mean, most everybody has enough players where if you let them, they will beat you. And so you've got to make sure that you bring your A game every week. It may be A minus some weeks. It may be A plus some weeks, but you got to bring your A game. And I think LSU has learned that. But, of course, you know, you have to prove it every week. So my saying it Friday afternoon doesn't make it so if they don't do it Saturday afternoon. So it's, I mean, it's easy to sit here and recognize that. Everybody, and you know, too, because of the, I mean, you were a great basketball player, but there were some days you were greater than other days. And a lot of it is just real commitment, you know, because it is natural for human beings to slack off a little bit after you have had an excellent outcome. The next time you do something, you may not pay enough attention to it, and you don't do it quite as well as you did the day before. Human nature.
Yeah.
That is the way it is. And football is a team game, and it's filled with that.
Doug Morrow, kind enough to join us. He'll be on the call of the game with Chris Blair. You can listen to the game starting at 2:30 right here on 103.7 The Game. It's the CBS Game of the Week. I'm still, you know, let's go back to the Florida game. I'm still amazed at LSU's efficiency on the offensive side. It's been well documented, 42 points in only 48 plays, the 50-50 mixture of run and pass. Clyde Edwards-Helaire looked terrific. Joe Burrow was as good as ever. This offense, it just seems like it is at such an efficient level that I don't know how you prepare to try to stop it.
It's a real challenge, I'll tell you, because, one of the things that allows a team to be successful is when they have good players. And when they have a lot of good players, it's easier to be successful. And when they have a lot of great players, it does make it a whole lot easier as long as those players play great. LSU's got a lot of great players. They really do. Yeah. And one of the things, you know, was interesting, I think it was LSU's first touchdown drive last week against Florida. Tigers, I think, first possession, ended up missing a field goal after a drive, and the next possession scored a touchdown. But it was the classic. You know, Coach O is always saying he wants to be 50-50 run pass. That's the perfect mix. Well, they were 50-50 run pass on that touchdown drive. One run, one pass. There were two plays on it. And so that's the perfect split for the 50-50. Let's keep them guessing. You end up with 6 points out of it. I mean, that's, if they can do that every drive, that's what they want to do.
That's pretty good. One pass, one run, 6 points. But it's not like that hasn't occurred before because – they're scoring at such a high clip, but the offensive line won the day, didn't they? That was the big, and so what everyone was concerned about against this very venerable Florida defense, but the offensive line won the day.
They won the day against what was and what is a very good defense. The Florida not only has really good players across the front, but they have depth across the front, and they're really good in the secondary. LSU took advantage not of players who were not quite so good, because everybody Florida had was good. LSU simply outperformed them at the right time. So you might have a pass receiver who was well covered by a defender, but the pass is perfect. The receiver makes a tough catch under pressure from the defender, and there you go with another first down. And that's what LSU's learned to do. That's hard to do, is to play after play come up in a challenging situation defeating your opponent. And you have to defeat him enough times routinely where in football, you know, you end up in the end zone. Now, LSU ends up in the end zone pretty quickly because they have that ability to pick up big chunks of yardage, whether in the passing game or now in the running game, as they demonstrated with two long runs by two different backs last week against Florida. Now, I tell you, Mississippi State has lost their two deep defensive front. Their front four guys, they had three first-round NFL draft choices from last year's team. But they lost two deep, so they are not that good. They have some young players who are going to be improving and who are going to be good, but they're not there yet. They are not what Mississippi State's team defensively was last year. And so, consequently, you know, there's some good and some bad. Brian Cole is the second or third leading tackler in the SEC. And that's a good thing, to be the third leading tackler. But he's a safety. So that tells you that the defensive line and the linebackers are not making the tackles. It is the safety that's got to come up and make the tackles. So that's a good thing and a bad thing, but it tells you a lot about the Mississippi State defense, that they just, you know, they're not going to dominate the offensive line as they did last year.
Right. And they certainly don't have an offense that can keep pace with the team. I want to take Joe Burrow to Las Vegas with me, because he said before the season started, don't be surprised if we're averaging 40, 50, maybe 60 points a game. I mean, Nostradamus, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, he did say that, and I don't think anybody literally believed him, but he was literally correct so far.
No.
I tell you, you know, Mississippi State, they have a freshman quarterback who's playing now, Garrett Schrader, 6'4", you know, 225, and a very talented kid, but inexperienced. But he's a high percentage passer, around 70% or so far. But, you know, he's got a receiver or two who are capable but inexperienced right now. Is he going to have the opportunity to throw it Does he run as Nick Fitzgerald ran for Mississippi State for a couple of years?
Exactly.
Or is he just a guy that has a, an arm to throw some passes, but he's not that great a runner? I think he's an adequate runner. But I don't think they want him running because their starting quarterback, Tommy Stevens, who transferred from Penn State, he is injured and has been injured off and on all season long. They don't want then their third quarterback is injured, their first quarterback is injured, and here's their second quarterback, and they don't want him injured. So I don't think they want him to run a lot, and LSU may make it easy for him to run a lot because he's going to get hit a lot when he does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they have a good running back in Kylan Hill. I think the key, much like a week ago at Orgeron, said we have to stop the run first. I think you stop the run against Mississippi State, put the ball in the freshman's hands, and go ahead and throw it against Stingley. He proved an awful lot, didn't he? Florida really and Dan Mullen really challenged him. But when the big play was needed, that little freshman made the play.
They challenged him, and he gave up some pass completions, particularly at the beginning of the second half. The Florida drive, I think they went at it four plays in a row with different receivers, with a mix of them, and they had a lot of good receivers. And he played excellent defense on every one of the plays, and every one of them was completed because the quarterback threw a perfect pass and the receiver made great catches. Look, that's going to happen sometime. The main thing is that he didn't go sit on the sideline and pout about it. He got back and intercepted the pass in the end zone several series later, which kind of turned the game around. So it's, you know, Stingley is a guy. I want him to have an opportunity to run a punt back. And, of course, the teams that we've played have had excellent punters that had great hang time. So he's had a lot of fair catches, but he's had very, very little chance to run one back. I hope that he does have that chance because he's such an exciting player. And he's so mature for being a freshman. Such a talented young man, and LSU's got some other people similar, but I think he stands out more than anybody else in that freshman class.
It's kind of funny. Just a year ago today, he'd be playing for Dunham High School against their rival, Episcopal. And now here he is preseason or midseason an All-American, maybe the freshman of the year in the country. Just it's remarkable the talent that this kid has. Look, I ran into our buddy Brent Bankston last night, and he said, y'all going to have a great Friday night meal. He said, they haven't been so great, but they're going to be great this one. Scott Woodward's going to be there. Y'all going to have a ball. And I'm told by Jim Nickel in the Nickel Report just prior to this that you guys aren't staying in Columbus anymore. You're staying right there in Starkville at a new hotel, like a stone's throw from the stadium. So that's a good thing, too.
Well, for anybody to say it's a good thing that you get to stay in Starkville, I'm not sure exactly what you mean. As I've heard said by the venerable Skip Bourdon, he said, I went tried to go to Starkville one time, but it was closed. So we are staying in Starkville. We're staying 5 minutes from the stadium. Until you realize that everything in Starkville is 5 minutes from the stadium.
That's true. That's true. Oh, Doug Morrow, the second show will be at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. Stay tuned for the comedy affair of Doug Morrow. But I just don't see Mississippi State. LSU would have to help State for them to stay close to this game, in my humble opinion. I just don't see how State can hang with the Tigers this year. I just don't.
No, LSU's going to – if Mississippi State wins it, it's because LSU won it for them. There's no way, but, of course, everybody knows there is a way, and that is when you think there's no way. So, I mean, the key thing, and Coach Orgeron has been very focused on this, is that to play one game at a time, and I break it down, as I always do, even further than that. It's one play at a time. It's the John Wooden way of playing any sport.
That's right.
And that is you pay attention to detail and you do everything correctly. Every step that you take, you step the right place. You be prepared to do whatever you're going to do on the next step. And that goes for basketball, baseball, football, every sport, every human endeavor. And John Wooden's a great model for that, as I know you know. And I think a lot of football coaches have adopted his way of doing things, and it pays off if people pay attention to it.
He is Doug Morrow. He is the color analyst on the LSU Sports Radio Network. Doug, thank you so much. It wouldn't be a football Friday without you. Safe travels to Starkville, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordy. Good being with you.
Hi, buddy. You take care. That brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlet. 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Man, if you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. Back to wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. Closing touches to hour number one on an NBA front. Hate to hear this, but a severe injury has been ruled out for Zion Williamson's right knee, but he is expected to miss a period of weeks to start the regular season. The Pels are clearly treating the injury with an abundance of caution, but there's no shortage of confidence on a full recovery. Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted that out as it was feared that there may be a tear or something with Zion Williamson. He is not with the team in New York City for tonight's preseason game against the Knicks as he stays back in New Orleans for more testing and more treatment. So we can only hope for the best. That puts a damper on what has been an excellent preseason for the number one overall pick. He's been averaging 23 points, 6.5 rebounds, shooting 71% in the first four preseason games, averaging 27.3 minutes a night. But now the Pelicans head into the season with its star rookie on the sideline. The Pelicans are figuring to be cautious on this regarding his return, but at 6'7", 284, they're confident he'll make a full recovery. And here's hoping that he does. So it looks like Nicolo Melli will fill in his role until Zion is back and better than ever. Yes, indeed. So we can only hope for the best on that one. Don't forget, we've got the Saints watch party versus the Chicago Bears this Sunday from 3 to 6 p.m. at Twin Peaks on Johnston. Ben Love will give free Saints gear away to all those that are involved. And Twin Peaks will have game day food, drink specials, and, of course, scenic views. 3 to 6 this Sunday, Twin Peaks Saints watch party. Back for hour number two after these messages.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
All right, hour number two of two, and away we go, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best truck in the business. Everybody wants to own a Peterbilt truck with locations in Lafayette, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and Lake Charles. It's the goal of every driver to own a Peterbilt truck. Well, Football Friday got started on a Thursday as the Ragin' Cajuns went up to Jonesboro, Arkansas, and just put it to Arkansas State, 37-20. George Faust, sports director, KLFY, joins us for his Fridays with Faust segment. Always a pleasure to talk with the main man. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Jordy. How are you, man?
I am terrific. The weather is great. We've got we got to talk about the Raging Cajuns. We got to talk about a couple of big games in high school football. But gee whiz, 5-2 overall, 2-1 in the Sun Belt. That was a must win for Billy Napier and his ball club. And they went on the road and they did it in Raging Cajun style. They just ran it and ran it, and Arkansas State couldn't stop them.
Look, you know, we all know how good that that offensive backfield is for the Cajuns. Where when they get going, it's pretty impressive. And you saw that last night. Eli Mitchell, Trey Regis, Raymond Calais, they said, look, there's a party in the end zone, and we all want to be a part of it. And that's kind of what took over the contest. They were able to, I mean, you gotta be impressed with the way the offensive line played, because, you know, without them blocking up front, those guys don't get anywhere. And so I think what they're really pleased about is that it's a perfect way to bounce back from a loss to a team that's in the top 25 now in App State. And this game, yeah. Arkansas State's been a more of a rival game. It's been pretty difficult for the Cajuns to kind of get into Jonesboro and win there. They hadn't won there since 2009. It's very impressive to go on the road, get a win there, and take care of business the way they did, dominating on the ground and handling their business that way. That was impressive to see.
Yeah, George Faust with us here on the Jordy Helpert Show, Fridays with Faust. Mitchell is the bell cow. I mean, he totes it a bunch. He had 23 carries. I guess Calais says, I better make the most of what I got. 8 carries for 144 yards. I mean, he said, I may not get it again. I might as well just go with it.
Right. You gotta take your chances where you can, right? Yeah. And it looks like Raymond did that last night. But see, the beautiful thing is these guys aren't, I mean, they're competing with each other, but they want each other to succeed, too. If you talk to them, it's interesting to hear how much they want the other guy to succeed. And I think that's the key to their success, is their ability to be able to not be selfish and do whatever's best for the team. If you know, Trey Regis running down to the 5-yard line and they decide to put in Raymond Calais or Eli, they're not going to get upset about it. They know that their time's coming, too. It's just a matter of being selfless and making sure you promote the team. I think that's what they've done a good job of this year with regards to the backfield there.
Yeah. Impressive offensively, impressive defensively. Arkansas State threw the ball a lot, but they were behind. So, you know, they didn't give up the very big plays. And now you wait till November the 2nd, you got a home game against Texas State. Where is this ball club right now? I really think we're going to have a rematch back up in Boone, North Carolina again for the Sun Belt Championship game.
I think the Cajuns have everything they want in front of them. You know, I really believe that they were picked to win the West. That's, you know, sometimes those preseason polls are actually correct. You know, I know coaches don't like to look at them and they say, oh, it's based off of last year. Nothing has to do with this season. I understand all that, but sometimes, the media actually gets it right, or the coaches, or whoever's doing the poll, and I think that's a right that happened. I agree with you. I think the Cajuns, if they just take care of business the rest of the way, which is it seems, I mean, if we're chalking it up here, you know, it seems like that'll be the case as well. I tend to believe what you just said, you know, that by winning this last game, it really sets you up to win the West. You go take care of business. Of course, you know, you can never rule out a rival game against ULM. That's going to be a contest where it's going to be here in Lafayette. So it's one of those games where you can throw records out the door when it comes to that contest. But I think
that's true.
The Cajuns are able to take care of business the rest of the way here.
Jordan. All right, so the weather is great. We've got another football Friday night in Acadiana. District play is underway. The season's going by so quickly. Where should we focus our attention this evening?
Well, it seems like a recurring theme, but STM and Turlings are playing tonight, and that's at Cougar Stadium on the campus of STM. And I think
that contest is always an interesting one because of the proximity of the schools, because two Catholic schools in Lafayette, they always are battling in not only academics but in athletics and every sport, every facet, and it's a district game, and it's one of those games where Terling's really, I think the general consensus from people that are outside looking in is that Terling's feels like the little brother of STM, so to speak. You know what I mean? But I don't know that that's reality. But that's a kind of a general feel, and so I think Terling's wants to kind of make sure they can prove their worth and take care of business, and they have the team to do it. I mean, they have a really creative offense under Dane Chiponche, and they have talent there, and they've just they started the season off phenomenally and were able to kind of put together a streak of wins, and then ran into Notre Dame, and then obviously a couple of other hiccups along the way. But when it comes to STM, hey, look, that's a team that's reeling. They've lost two straight. When's the last time we've said that the Cougars have lost two straight? One was a heartbreaker to Catholic Baton Rouge. Yeah. And then the next week was a letdown, kind of maybe a little bit of still being shell-shocked from Catholic High, and they lose to Westgate, and Westgate comes in and steals one, if you will, and takes care of business over the Cougars. So the Cougars are trying to get back to the winning ways that they're used to and known for, and Terling's just trying to kind of make a little hay in the district and kind of take over. So that contest, to me, is one to watch, and then there's a few other good ones. I know New Iberia and Acadiana in Class 5A, they're playing each other. Nish has a very interesting. They've switched to the wing T, so it's kind of a different style for Kurt Ware, his first year as the head coach at Nish. Acadiana obviously coming in on fire, or firing on all cylinders. And I think you look for another big game from the Lucky Brooks, Acadiana's running back, and Dylan Monette, their other running back, and Keontae Williams, the son of Keelan, is the quarterback at Acadiana. I like what Acadiana does consistently, and they are one of the top programs in the state for a reason. And I think Acadiana probably wins that game. Although New Iberia it seems like they've kind of found their footing underneath a new coach and a new system, and we'll see what happens as Acadiana kind of pushes through. Everybody is really high on Acadiana right now and how impressive they are, but looking at them on paper and looking at them on the field, that can be two different things sometimes. But I like Acadiana in that game over Nish.
All right, well, make sure to tune into KLFY for all the previews and all the highlights coming up at 10 o'clock tonight. George, thank you so much. Raging Cajuns get a win. I don't think the Saints are going to have any troubles against Mississippi State. I'm worried about that Sunday game with our Saints at Chicago. How about you?
Yeah, it's hard to go up to Soldier Field. The Saints don't play well in Soldier Field either. You know, it's not historically, Soldier Field isn't that nice to us as Saints fans and players. So it concerns me a little bit. I think, but if you would have taken four wins from Teddy Bridgewater while Drew Brees was out, I think, people would have said, all right, we'll take that.
Yeah.
I don't think, so if they do happen to
Good
go
point.
In and lose, it's okay. Well, we expected to lose. Did we really think Teddy Bridgewater was going to go 5-0? In his stint as a starting quarterback, who knew? But it didn't feel that way from starting out. So, I agree with you. Soldier Field scares me a little bit. LSU, I don't want them to have a letdown, a big emotional game over Florida, taking on Mississippi State early game. They'll be ready for it. They should be used to those early games now, right? So the 2:30 game, but still early for Tigers.
That's right. All right. Yeah. We will see. George, thank you. I know you're busy. We greatly appreciate the time, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good, Jordy. Look forward to it.
All right, George Faust, Sports Director, KLFY. The Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge continues. If you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station, make sure to get your picks in for Week 7 at 1037thegame.com and try and beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. I have no idea how I'm doing in this thing. No clue. Probably dead last. We'll see. Saints, Bears talk from Lake Forest, Illinois. Larry Holder of The Athletic joins us next as we roll on with this Football Friday in Acadiana on the Jordy Helpert Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever. As you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, the New Orleans Saints look to improve to 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater as their starter in Drew Brees' place when they visit Khalil Mack and the Chicago Bears on Sunday. Larry Holder of The Athletic covers the Saints. He covers everything in Louisiana and does a great job for The Athletic. And Larry, kind enough to join us again this Friday. You missed a good one in Tiger Stadium, buddy, but the Saints didn't let us down. They just shut down the mustachioed one in Jacksonville. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, and yeah, I'm disappointed in myself that I allowed Jeff Duncan to cover LSU Florida, and I went to Jacksonville for like Norfest, but hey, at least the Saints ended up winning that game just in whatever fashion they have to win it. That's the way they do it. And I will say this, though. Look, Saints going to Chicago, it would be hard enough without Drew Brees, but it certainly points in the direction that they're not going to have Alvin Kamara and Jared Cook. And if there's ever a spot where it looks like a loss could be coming, this might be it.
Yeah, and the Raiders didn't do us any favors over in London. I was shocked that they beat the Bears in that one. Now the Bears have kind of had a bye week, and I expect them to come out and play their best. Is Mitch Trubisky expected to play at quarterback?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. He's practiced all week, and I mean, I don't think there's a major difference, honestly, between Trubisky and Chase Daniels. So that's the thing. Like the Saints. Even though we talk about all these injuries, they still have a shot because their defense is good and the Bears' offense is still pretty inept. So I'm assuming it's going to be low scoring. At least the Saints have the advantage with the kicker. I mean, anyone who's a Bears kicker is unreliable. And, of course, Will Lutz has been very, very good, especially on the road. He's been really good. So that's why I still can't totally count the Saints out of this game.
That's right.
But But when you look at it, this is a game that Chicago probably feels like they must have, and yet the Saints have built themselves up some cushion by winning these last four games without Drew Brees.
And you said it perfectly. They've done it in a fashion, whatever it takes to win. The defense has been terrific. They've had 18 sacks. They're tied with Green Bay and Tennessee for sixth in the NFL, and they still haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher this season or in 32 games for that matter. So they held Dallas, Tampa Bay, and Jacksonville to season lows in total yards. Why all of a sudden? What has happened to make this defense one of the elite of late?
Well, look, I think we started seeing it a little bit in 17. We saw it more in 18, and I think we're starting to see it earlier this season. I feel like that front four, no matter who you really put in there, I think they've got a lot of depth there, and they've just been really productive. And you can even point to, say, someone like Malcolm Brown. I mean, he's been kind of a really sneaky good signing for the Saints in free agency. Of course, he's a former first-round pick with the Patriots, playing nose tackle. Cam Jordan is being Cam Jordan. Marcus Davenport, you don't hear anyone screaming about him being a bust anymore. I mean, he's been very good, especially the last month. And
that's true.
You throw Sheldon Rankins in there, and David Onyemata's in there playing well. Like, they got depth across that board, and I feel like it's really even for someone, say, like Demario Davis, who they use in the run game, you know, defending him against the run, and then they'll blitz him a lot, he's able to be freed up. So if you add it all up, then throw in Marshawn Lattimore's playing like the Marshawn Lattimore we saw in 17. The rest of the secondary is playing pretty well. And so, yeah. I mean, that's, you add it all up and all the pieces add together, it's one of the better defenses right now in the league.
Larry Holder of The Athletic, when you heard the news about P.J. Williams, were you concerned, or do you think that C.J. Gardner-Johnson can fill in that void and fill in it well?
No, I wasn't really that concerned. Also, I would not discount Patrick Robinson. I mean, that's like he was one of the better nickel corners in the league when they signed him a couple years ago. And
true.
P.J. Williams kind of beat him out. And whenever a Gardner-Johnson has been seen playing time this year, it really hasn't necessarily been as a nickel corner, you know. So I'm curious to see which of those guys play in that slot and just how often maybe do they mix and match with that. But the fact that they have options, I mean, look, last year we were talking about the Saints going out and having a trade for a corner because they had none. They had to go out and get Eli Apple. And now you can absorb a two-game loss of P.J. Williams because you have some good depth at corner. I mean, these two guys that I'm mentioning would probably be playing for other teams, like actually seeing regular playing time. So it just goes to show you the difference of depth from one year to the next at corner.
Larry, you mentioned Alvin Kamara in all likelihood being out. Akeem Hicks, the ex-Saints defensive lineman, he's out. I'm not too sad about that. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah, he's probably pretty sad because he always wants to exact revenge on the Saints. He feels like he's someone who got unnecessarily shipped out, and it was definitely something to where he still holds a little bit of a grudge. But, yeah. For a time when, say, Alvin Kamara is going to miss some time and you have a backup quarterback with Teddy Bridgewater in the game, the fact that their best guy on the interior isn't playing is probably a pretty fortunate scenario for the Saints. Yeah. But Khalil Mack is still a stud. Their defense is still playing really well with tons of pieces. So it's not having Hicks is definitely a benefit for the Saints, but the rest of that unit's still pretty darn good.
Who scares you when Chicago has the ball? Does anybody?
No. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's why the Saints, look, I've picked against the Saints a lot of times and twice through this span, and they proved me wrong. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to take the Saints 16-13 just because I don't think Chicago has anyone that scares me at all. You know, Allen Robinson's probably their best playmaker. I mean, they have Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery and some guy, but it's like no one that really says, oh my gosh, you got to be fearful of these guys. And I mean, I feel like that's the way Chicago's been forever, right? I mean, go back to like Walter Payton. I feel like he's the biggest threat they've had in the past 30 years. And so, but still, yeah, it's that's why the Saints probably feel like they can certainly hang with Chicago. To me, it could be a close game, and it's a battle of field goal kickers. Like I said, I'll take Will Lutz every day.
I'm with you. I'm glad they don't have Devin Hester anymore. But but look, it's not so bad to have to punt the ball with Morstead, play the field position game, and hope for a turnover here and there, and that's what gets you a win. Morstead's been just incredible.
Yeah, he was a real difference maker. Of course, he has been his entire career, but of course, against Jacksonville, I mean, he really flipped the script and made Gardner Minshew pinned him back. And boy, they really put him off of his spot, made him pump, double pump, triple pump passes. He was not comfortable back there, especially pinned in the way back in his own territory. And so, yeah, I think they're going to want to really lean on that aspect as well, just because if you can pin the Bears back, I mean, they're probably not going to go on massive drives all the time against you. So he will certainly be a potential equalizer for the Saints.
And what Trubisky does pretty well is he runs with the football. They're not going to let him run. He's not 100%, so you keep him in the pocket. I don't know. If the Saints don't turn it over, I think they have a great chance in this thing, but we shall see. Larry Holder, thank you, my friend. We'll let you go do the Auburn game or something like that. How about that? Is that fair?
I'm actually going to cover the Auburn game. Yeah,
there
so
you
that
go.
Is fair.
All right, that'll be a good one, too.
There you go.
I appreciate it, buddy. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right, Jordy. Talk to you next week.
You're the best. Larry Holder of The Athletic, brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your tailgating needs and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Monday's headlines on a Friday next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Well, the New Orleans Saints look to improve to 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater as their starter in Drew Brees' place when they visit Khalil Mack and the Chicago Bears on Sunday. Larry Holder of The Athletic covers the Saints. He covers everything in Louisiana and does a great job for The Athletic. And Larry, kind enough to join us again this Friday. You missed a good one in Tiger Stadium, buddy, but the Saints didn't let us down. They just shut down the mustachioed one and Jacksonville. How are you, my friend?
I'm good, and yeah, I'm disappointed in myself that I allowed Jeff Duncan to cover LSU Florida, and I went to Jacksonville for like Norfest, but hey, at least the Saints ended up winning that game just in whatever fashion they have to win it. That's the way they do it. And I will say this, though. Look, Saints going to Chicago, it would be hard enough without Drew Brees, but it certainly points in the direction that they're not going to have Alvin Kamara and Jared Cook. And if there's ever a spot where it looks like a loss could be coming, this might be it.
Yeah, and the Raiders didn't do us any favors over in London. I was shocked that they beat the Bears in that one. Now the Bears have kind of had a bye week, and I expect them to come out and play their best. Is Mitch Trubisky expected to play at quarterback?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. He's practiced all week, and I mean, I don't think there's a major difference, honestly, between Trubisky and Chase Daniels. So that's the thing. Like the Saints. Even though we talk about all these injuries, they still have a shot because their defense is good and the Bears' offense is still pretty inept. So I'm assuming it's going to be low scoring. At least the Saints have the advantage with the kicker. I mean, anyone who's a Bears kicker is unreliable. And, of course, Will Lutz has been very, very good, especially on the road. He's been really good. So that's why I still can't totally count the Saints out of this game. Mm.
That's right.
But but when you look at it, this is a game that Chicago probably feels like they must have, and yet the Saints have built themselves up some cushion by winning these last four games without Drew Brees.
And you said it perfectly. They've done it in a fashion, whatever it takes to win. The defense has been terrific. They've had 18 sacks. They're tied with Green Bay and Tennessee for sixth in the NFL, and they still haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher this season or in 32 games for that matter. So they held Dallas, Tampa Bay, and Jacksonville to season lows in total yards. Why all of a sudden? What has happened to make this defense one of the elite of late?
Well, look, I think we've started seeing it a little bit in 17. We saw it more in 18, and I think we're starting to see it earlier this season. I feel like that front four, no matter who you really put in there, I think they've got a lot of depth there, and they've just been really productive. And you can even point to, say, someone like Malcolm Brown. I mean, he's been kind of a really sneaky good signing for the Saints in free agency. Of course, he's former first-round pick with the Patriots, playing nose tackle. Cam Jordan is being Cam Jordan. Marcus Davenport, you don't hear anyone screaming about him being a bust anymore. I mean, he's been very good especially the last month. And
yeah,
so,
that's true.
You throw Sheldon Rankins in there, and David Onyemata's in there playing well. Like, they got depth across that board, and I feel like it's really, even for someone, say, like Demario Davis, who they use in the run game, you know, defending him against the run, and then they'll blitz him a lot. He's able to be freed up. So it's, you add it all up, then throw in Marshawn Lattimore's playing like the Marshawn Lattimore we saw in 17. The rest of the secondary is playing pretty well. And so, yeah. I mean, that's, you add it all up and all the pieces add together, it's one of the better defenses right now in the league.
Larry Holder of The Athletic, when you heard the news about P.J. Williams, were you concerned, or do you think that C.J. Gardner-Johnson can fill in that void and fill in it well?
No, I wasn't really that concerned. Also, I would not discount Patrick Robinson. I mean, that's like, he's the, you know, he was one of the better nickel corners when they in the league when they signed him a couple years ago. And
true.
P.J. Williams kind of beat him out. And whenever a Gardner-Johnson has been seen playing time this year, it really hasn't necessarily been as a nickel corner, you know. So I'm curious to see which of those guys play in that slot and just how often maybe do they mix and match with that. But the fact that they have options, I mean, look, last year we were talking about the Saints going out and having a trade for a corner because they had none. They had to go out and get Eli Apple. And now you can absorb a two-game loss of P.J. Williams because you have some good depth at corner. I mean, these two guys that I'm mentioning would probably be playing for other teams, like actually seeing regular playing time. So it just goes to show you the difference of depth from one year to the next at corner.
Larry, you mentioned Alvin Kamara in all likelihood being out. Akeem Hicks, the ex-Saints defensive lineman, he's out. I'm not too sad about that. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah, he's probably pretty sad because he always wants to exact revenge on the Saints. He feels like he's someone who got unnecessarily shipped out, and it was definitely something to where he still holds a little bit of a grudge. But, yeah. For a time when, say, Alvin Kamara is going to miss some time and you have a backup quarterback with Teddy Bridgewater in the game, the fact that their best guy on the interior isn't playing is probably a pretty fortunate scenario for the Saints. Yeah. But Khalil Mack is still a stud. Their defense is still playing really well with tons of pieces. So it's not having Hicks is definitely a benefit for the Saints, but the rest of that unit's still pretty darn good.
Who scares you when Chicago has the ball? Does anybody?
No, that's the thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's why the Saints. Look, I said, man, I've picked against the Saints a lot of times, and twice through this span, and they proved me wrong. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to take the Saints 16-13 just because I don't think Chicago has anyone that scares me at all. You know, Allen Robinson's probably their best playmaker. I mean, they have Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery and some guy, but it's like no one that really says, oh my gosh, you got to be fearful of these guys. And I mean, I feel like that's the way Chicago has been forever, right? I mean, since,
yeah.
Like, I mean, go back to like Walter Payton. I feel like he's the biggest threat they've had in the past 30 years. And so, but still, yeah, it's that's why the Saints probably feel like they can certainly hang with Chicago. To me, it could be a close game, and it's a battle of field goal kickers. Like I said, I'll take Will Lutz every day.
I'm with you. I'm glad they don't have Devin Hester anymore. But but look, it's not so bad to have to punt the ball with Morstead, play the field position game, and hope for a turnover here and there, and that's what gets you a win. Morstead's been just incredible.
Yeah, he was a real difference maker. Of course, he has been his entire career, but of course, against Jacksonville, I mean, he really flipped the script and made Gardner Minshew pinned him back. And
yeah.
Boy, they really put him off of his spot, made him pump, double pump, triple pump passes. He was not comfortable back there, especially pinned in the, way back in his own territory. And so, yeah, I think they're going to want to really lean on that aspect as well, just because if you can pin the Bears back, I mean, they're probably not going to go on massive drives all the time against you. So he will certainly be a potential equalizer for the Saints.
What Trubisky does pretty well is he runs with the football. They're not going to let him run. He's not 100%, so you keep him in the pocket. I don't know. If the Saints don't turn it over, I think they have a great chance in this thing, but we shall see. Larry Holder, thank you, my friend. We'll let you go do the Auburn game or something like that. How about that? Is that fair?
I'm actually going to cover the Auburn game. Yeah,
there
so that
go.
Is fair.
All right, that'll be a good one, too.
There you go.
I appreciate it, buddy. Have a good weekend. Thank you.
All right, Jordy. Talk to you next week.
You're the best. Larry Holder of The Athletic, brought to you in part by DC's Little Capital Exxon. I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your tailgating needs and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger ever. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Monday's headlines on a Friday, next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Well, if you've been following the show now during this football season, this time on a Friday, we always try to give you Monday's headlines on a Friday. This is, in other words, we're trying to predict things, right? It's just another way of saying who you got. So let's bring in the regular trio. Of course, you know CD back in the Master Control Suite, and we always welcome our good friend, George Becknell. Good afternoon, George. How you been, man?
Jordy, I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. How did we all do last week? I think my claim to fame was, my headline was, the D is in the Big Easy, because I thought the Saints would shut down Jacksonville, and for once in a blue moon, I was pretty accurate. So my percentage now has gone from zero to you know, about 5% accuracy. So I'll take it whenever I can get it. How about you guys? What were you proudest of?
Well, I think I feel pretty good about my Florida pick. I pretty much felt good about everything last week except my baseball picks. My baseball picks were atrocious. But the fact that Jalen Ramsey wasn't on the team anymore and I predicted the Saints would win, even if it didn't happen like I said it would, I still think that is a win.
All right, that's fair. CD, anything that you want to hang your hat on?
I kind of want to hang my hat on the Astros-Yankees series. I said it was going to go seven, but, man, it seems like that one's going to be less and less likely. Thank you, not as much Zach Greinke, but George Springer, Carlos Correa, just teeing off on Masahiro Tanaka to help him get that huge win. They could be locking things down tonight.
If you're a Yankee, good luck. Because if you're fortunate enough and beat Verlander, then you got Cole the next day. So good luck with that. All right, let's get busy. We're going to get it out of the way first and foremost. George, the Starkville Daily News. What will be the headline from the LSU-Mississippi State game after that 2:30 kickoff subsides on Saturday afternoon?
In the words of the late, great Dennis Green, we let them off the hook. Look, Mississippi State always gets up for LSU. They always play LSU tough. I think LSU's defense is vulnerable against the spread. If a team runs the spread, they can run and pass on LSU's defense. I truly believe that this is going to be a close football game. LSU will not beat the spread of 17.5. But I think it's going to take a late game heroic effort from Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and Justin Jefferson to get it done. So I think LSU wins this game on a late fourth quarter drive.
Ooh.
They do get out of Starkville with a win, but it's going to be very, very close. It's going to be a lot closer than what people think. So they're going to do their Dennis Green impression and say, we knew who LSU is, who we thought they were, and we let them off the hook.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, CD, what do you think they'll be saying in Starkville?
I think they'll be saying a lot of things about what happened with LSU in the past, and I think we kind of see the headline read, the trend has been bucked. We look at what's happened over the last several years between LSU and Mississippi State. That thing has been traded back and forth, back and forth. Whoever's the home team has won it. And I think a lot like what we saw on Thursday night with the Cajuns, Arkansas State, bucking that trend. They do it again on a Saturday afternoon. And then the talk continues to be over the next several weeks is the will he of one at Joe Moorhead. And we're talking about, of course, that Rutgers job that looms. Will he be taking that job before the season ends, Jory? That's where the real intrigue is going to be, probably come Monday.
Okay. So, George, you think it's going to be close. CD, not so. Okay. Look, you look at all the intangibles. And what wins games? Players. LSU's got better players across the board. Better players. They've got a Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback. Mississippi State has a true freshman quarterback making his second or third start. LSU will have more fans in the stands than state fans will. Headlines, pick your score. Does Ed O feel generous or is he going to make a statement? I think he makes a statement. I think the Tigers put up 60, and I think it's a Joe blowout Burrow. I think they score at will. I think the Tigers put up 60, and I think it's not even close. I think State just folds the tent and realizes, try as we might, we can't stop this club. We certainly can't outscore it. It's just a bad day in Starkville for Mississippi State. I just think LSU's not going to come out flat. There's too much to play for. They've got too good a leadership, and those cowbells, they don't ring when they're behind. They ring when they're ahead, and I'm sorry, State's not going to be ahead. They just can't. I just don't see where they have an advantage anywhere at any position in the ball game. So LSU blowout in Starkville. Okay, I hope I'm right. I think y'all hope I'm right. Let's see what happens. All right, the other big game is where game day is. It's the primetime matchup. It's the whiteout at Penn State. I love this this kind of a makeshift, guys, off of the Hard Knocks. I actually watched them with 24/7 with Penn State on HBO. It was really, really good. I enjoyed it. That whiteout thing is pretty intimidating. Michigan's coming to town. Another opportunity for Harbaugh, or can he beat a top 10 team? What will be the headlines, George, in Happy Valley come Monday?
The headline will be burnt khakis. As you already know, Jim Harbaugh has put Michigan's program on the upswing. They're a lot better than they were when he took over the position, but he has not been able to win the big game ever. You're going into Happy Valley against an undefeated Penn State team. They're ranked second in the nation. This will be a huge game to put Michigan in position to win the Big Ten, but it's not going to happen. The moment is too big for this football team. The moment is too big for Jim Harbaugh. I'm sorry, bro. You're on the hot seat, and them khakis be burnt.
How come we try to have a gold game and a purple game, and we can't get half the stadium to dress up in that color? But Penn State, everybody. I'm talking everybody except maybe the whatever the allotment of ticket is to the visiting team. I mean, that is a spectacular spectacle. CD, what happens in Happy Valley?
What happens in Happy Valley, Jordy? I think it's without a doubt the heart of a lion will prevail over the Wolverine. What happens with the Nittany Lions continuing to make a statement in 2019, remain undefeated. And I think I have to agree with what George said. I think it's going to wind up being Harbaugh back on the hot seat. When you look at the beat writers in Michigan, Harbaugh back on the hot seat. That kind of discussion continues. But the heart of the Nittany Lion prevails over Michigan. Hashtag we are.
We are. I like that. Okay. What a lovely little name for a village, right? Happy Valley. I mean, you just got to smile when you hear that. Coach Franklin's done a tremendous job. He did a great job at Vanderbilt. He's done a tremendous job with Penn State. I think the crowd's too much. I think the defense for Penn State is way too much. Offense is serviceable. They don't have a Saquon Barkley, but they've got some serviceable running backs. I think the defense is just too good. Shea Patterson, it'll be a nightmare for him. And lights out, Michigan. Penn State gets the win in convincing fashion. And Jim Harbaugh, everything's set now. Can he get it done in Ann Arbor against Ohio State and save his job? We'll see. He's not getting it done in Happy Valley. There's no way, shape, or form that's going to happen. All right, George, Saints traveling to the Windy City, Soldier Field, Chicago. Bears offense doesn't scare anybody. Bears defense scares everybody. Saints have the better kicking game. Saints defense really, really good. I mean, I'm betting the under. I don't care what the over-under is. I'm betting the under. probably a low-scoring game. But what are the headlines of the Chicago Tribune come Monday?
No breeze in Windy City win for the New Orleans Saints this weekend. You know, I did the Times Picayune, so my bad on that. But,
oh, that's okay.
You know, I agree with you 100%. You know, if you look at these football teams, Mitchell Trubisky wasn't that great of a quarterback, but he's injured. Now Chase Daniel is playing, and who knows Chase Daniel better than Sean Payton, right? The Saints defense have been playing tremendous football. Will Lutz has been kicking out of his mind, to your point. Teddy Bridgewater has been very, very efficient. He's looked good in some moments. He hasn't looked that good, but he hasn't made any mistakes to lose the football game for the New Orleans Saints. I think this trend continues. They're not going to need a whole bunch of points. The Chicago defense is stingy, so I don't expect them to put up like 25 points or anything. Maybe 17 points. It's done this weekend. So I'm predicting the New Orleans Saints to win a game, a tough defensive battle in a low-scoring game, and they get out of Windy City with a win.
Wow. Okay. Clint, are you a New York pizza eater or a Chicago? New York thin crust, Chicago deep dish. What's your favorite?
Don't get me wrong, Jordy. Thin crust is good, but I love me some deep dish Chicago-style pizza.
Okay.
With the headline on Monday, after the Saints get a big win, are going to read, in Chicago at least, True Colors. That's TRU. Because Trubisky will be playing in this one. That's the big talking point everybody's been looking at, is will he play? It looks like he was full go in practice on Thursday. More likely than not, he was in full practice, full speed on Friday as well, heading into this big one at Soldier Field. And the True Colors show, and Trubisky winds up not exactly looking great. Teddy Bridgewater feasts on a little bit of a less than ideal defensive performance outside of, obviously, Khalil Mack. But Khalil Mack is held relatively in check by a strong offensive line performance. The Saints get the win, but Chase Daniel will take over as a starter for those Chicago Bears, because it's shown the true colors of Mitch Trubisky. He's not 100% ready to come back after that injury.
Hi, I've been going back and forth on this one the whole time. I keep wondering, when is this streak going to come to an end? I mean, can the Saints, how can they keep winning without Breeze? How can they keep winning with a quarterback, Teddy, that just doesn't take many chances, just kind of, but he, as you said, George, doesn't make any mistakes. I'm wondering, is Two Gloves going to finally make a mistake against a really, really good defense coming off a bye week after having lost in London to the Oakland Raiders? I'm like, gee whiz. But then I think, again, the Saints defense is really good. Nobody on the Bears offense scares me at all. And it may come down to the kicking game. So my headline in the Chicago Tribune is, Lutz out. Instead of lights out, Lutz out. Will Lutz the better kicker? Will Lutz get it done? Low-scoring game, much like the Dallas, much like the Jacksonville game. The Saints figure out a way. A lot of kicks from Thomas Morstead as he backs Chicago up, and the Saints defense says, go ahead and march 85, 90 yards. You can't do it. But I think Lutz is the difference. So Lutz out, and the Saints go 5-0 without Drew Brees. All right, we talked a little bit about it. Clint, I'm going to let you go first, since you are the huge Astros fan. Houston Chronicle this weekend. Astros in the World Series? What do you got?
The Astros are going to be in the World Series, and we get to see what maybe the MLB didn't want to see. We talked about it a lot, how now the Yankees on the ropes. I think they're going to wind up losing tonight. Because if they win tonight, it's out of the frying pan into the fire. You're playing Gerrit Cole inside the friendly confines of Minute Maid Park, and I think we see it in tonight. The Yankees go quietly into that good night, and we get ready for a national disaster. And we're talking about the Washington Nationals getting pelted on Tuesday night in Game 1. Because by then, Gerrit Cole, baby, is going to be the starter in Game Numero Uno to make sure we get enough rest for JV, for Greinke, and whoever else we want to throw out there. I've got a good feeling about this one.
All right, Greinke was pretty good, no question about that. You know, my dad would say, it's going back to Houston because they can't let this thing stop right now. There's too much money to be made with the more games you play. George, what's going to happen with the Houston Chronicle?
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Yeah.
The Houston Chronicle is going to read, "Oh no," Monday morning. Despite efforts from Verlander, Cole, Greinke, the New York Yankees turned it up.
No.
The Astros blow a 3-1 lead and don't even get to the World Series in the American League Championship Series. So the headline in Houston is just two words, "Oh no."
Wow, pulling the old Red Sox trick there. Houston Chronicle, here we go again, back in the World Series, Astros versus Nationals, over and done with. No, I think it goes back to Houston. I think they figure out a way to beat Verlander. I really do, but I don't think they beat Cole. Even though Cole was not as effective, but he was still really too good for the Yankees. I don't see him losing at Minute Maid Park. So the Astros, Nationals in the World Series. All right, you can throw out any other headline out there that you want in any other sport or whatever it may be. Who wants to go first? Go ahead.
Well, I got one. Hail Rocky Top.
Oh.
It's going to be about Rocky Top this weekend. Alabama doesn't look like Alabama of old, even though the offense has been balling. That defense looks a little suspect to me. I think they're not going to take Tennessee seriously. I think Tennessee's going to get up to play Alabama. And I'm going to go out on a limb and predict an upset in Tuscaloosa. Somewhere Peyton Manning, Peerless Price, and all these guys are going to be popping bottles this weekend. Hail Rocky Top.
You're crazy, George. I gotta check you. I gotta go get you checked in. Some of these predictions are just ridiculous. I'm kidding. All right, shock value. We'll see. You might be the smartest man in the world. We'll see. CD, what you got?
I think the Tennessee Volunteers will cover for what it's worth, and I don't think we'll be having George Becknell on again after that. That prediction of the Golden State Warriors-esque 3-1 lead blown in the ALCS. I don't see that happening. That being said, my other headline, Jordy, revolves around Bourbon Street Blues. Despite the Saints flying high on a big winning streak, heading to a fun matchup against the Arizona Cardinals, they're in a little bit of despair because of one man and one man only, the star rookie Zion Williamson, out for several weeks. And the vibe around Bourbon Street, not exactly the happiest, because everybody had such high expectations. And the attendance will show that next Friday when they take on those Dallas Mavericks to open up their home slate.
Yeah, they open up Tuesday on the road against the defending champion Toronto Raptors. We don't discuss these things beforehand. I promise, folks, we don't. I was going down the same road that you were going. My headline was front page, not sports page. Record attendance at church services in the Big Easy. Everybody's going in there praying for a healthy return of Zion Williamson, the prohibitive favorite for the NBA Rookie of the Year Award. Going to miss several weeks. We don't know exactly what that means exactly, but err on the side of caution. Gee whiz, the opener on TNT. They're hurting because of that. Those tickets aren't cheap at the Smoothie King Center to see him with the home opener. They're disappointed in that. He hasn't traveled with the team to New York as they take on the Knicks in the final preseason game this evening. So record attendance at church services in the Big Easy is the headline. Everybody praying for Zion to be healthy. George, thank you. CD, thank you as well. Those are your Monday headlines on a Friday. We'll be back to close it out here on this Football Friday on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 103.7thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, quick wrap-up here. Time for On This Day in Sports History. It was October 18th, the year 1977. Reggie Jackson of the New York Yankees hit three home runs against the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 6 of the 1977 World Series, lifting the Yankees to the World Series championship. Reggie Jackson, forever known as Mr. October because of what happened on this day, October 18th, 1977. If today is your birthday, October the 18th, man, all the best from all of us to all of you. You share your day with, happy 59th birthday, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Happy 35th birthday to Lindsey Vonn and my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter's favorite. Happy 32nd birthday to heartthrob Zac Efron. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks to all of our guests today, and it was a absolute plethora of them. Filling in, nice job by Heath Morton for our weather report. Jim Nickel, Doug Morrow, George Faust, Larry Holder, George Becknell. Thanks to all of you for listening. CD, you're the very best, and to our partners that make it possible each and every day, we couldn't do it without you. Go Tigers. Go Saints. Have a great weekend. Go Astros. Come on back Monday. Same time, same station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.